960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. Can you tell that you're the first person I've talked to today? 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, we're going to talk about cars for the next 2 hours. And these are kind of the unsaid rules. When you call us up, you give us the year, make, and model of your car. You tell us how many miles it's got on it. And then we start talking about the symptoms. A vibration, the air doesn't work, the air doesn't blow out of the vents, it cranks over in the morning but doesn't start, it doesn't start hot, that kind of stuff. It's a waste of everybody's time for you to start that I talked to the internet and then I did this, because at the end of that discussion it's kind of like, okay, you've done a lot of stuff, but in reality none of it's fixed it. So we've just traveled a path that just really doesn't make a lot of sense. Today's diesel day. Diesel. And isn't there a joke, Nate, about diesel? Diesel do it or something like that?
There's always some kind of pun related to that, yeah.
Yeah. It's kind of like, I don't know, some drunk guy went into a woman's clothing store, and he says, you know, I want a pair of pants, and they give him some, and he goes, diesel do it.
Yeah.
So anyway, Nate Brickane is with me. He's from Strictly Diesel, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. He only does diesels. He doesn't do the big trucks, but he does all kinds of light-duty diesel trucks, light and medium duty.
And actually, we're trying to branch out into some gasoline work too now, so looking for the SUVs and the pickups that have gasoline in them. We'll do anything pickup related.
Pickup gas or diesel.
Yep,
and
bet.
Of course the maintenance on the two of them is pretty much the same.
Okay. You bet. It's huge. Yep.
It's and you know, we do the same thing, and we find that most of the guys our age with a tint of gray in their hair, they're really good about the symptoms.
Yeah.
Because they don't want to be embarrassed at the front counter because there's a lobby full of women and they're telling us how to fix their car. Well, when they tell us how to fix our car, we have them sign a note that says, I'm telling you how to fix my car. I'll accept responsibility. See if it works.
Exactly. Yep.
But admittedly, we don't pull that piece of paper out but twice a year.
Yep.
So the idea is, and well, that's good. Welcome to the gasoline family.
Yeah.
Because with the exception of how we combust fuel, they're the same.
It's all the same, yeah.
Same transmission, same engine, same fuel system, virtually.
Virtually.
Same filters, same oil, same filters, all that stuff.
You bet.
You got injectors, and I got spark plugs. And I've got injectors, but they're gas.
Exactly.
So there's not much to it. So if you have a diesel question, and I'll give you the... obviously, the Fords are going to call in a lot.
Okay? We're okay with that.
Yeah. The 6-liter, the 6.4, and the 6.7. Then we got Dodge with the 5.9 and the 6.7.
Yep.
Then we got Ford starting with the 7.3. And then that giant piece of dog turd at 6. And then 6.4 is the next one?
6.4.
And then they got a 6.7?
6.7.
Okay.
Yep.
So they're all at about 6.7.
They're all in that
general
area. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
So we'll talk about the different good and bad about it.
Sure.
But before we do, let's take Blaine. Blaine's been waiting. Blaine, good morning to you.
Morning, Mark. I've got a 1999 GMC Safari, and the rear air-conditioned blower motor has stopped. Now, I know the location of the relay and the fuse, but I can't find the blower motor. Where is that motor located?
It's in the rear.
Okay.
Okay. But what I'm asking you is, it's got the vent up above the doors, or are they along the side?
They're up above the Dutch doors.
Okay. I'm pretty sure that it's in the quarter panel to the left or the right. As you open up the tailgate, it's going to be on the plastic behind the left and the right.
Okay.
And you say the blower's not working.
Right.
Okay. I was going to say turn the blower on and listen. You'll be able to tell which side it is.
Yeah.
But this might be one of those things that you could Google, and you could talk about a 99 Safari, a blower motor location would be what I'd do.
Absolutely.
Do you have any idea, left or right?
It's in that back area. It's got to be. Yeah.
And another thing you can do, too, is I'll tell you how you find out which one it is. It's going to have an evaporator back there, and it's going to have a drain. So if you crawl underneath it and you find a drain on the passenger side but not on the driver's side, but I'm thinking that it may have a drain from the evaporator high that goes down, but they're going to only open up one side. So
It's on the left side where it drips out.
Okay.
There you go. There's usually a vent on the inside, too, that leads you to go where the blower may be.
Yeah.
Just drawing air from the inside.
Yeah, there's a filter there, too. There on the left side.
Uh-huh. And if that's the filter, then that's the fresh air intake, or is that the outtake? I don't know the answer to that. Why do we have a filter back there?
It may just be a screen. I can't imagine there being a filter, but
yeah,
it's probably a screen. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
And let me ask you a question. Have you tried the real fix for at least a chance at fixing it? Is you go back there and you put it on speed 3, and you turn the front air off so you can just have it on speed 3, and then without breaking the plastic, beat on the doors or the quarters on both sides. If that son of a gun starts, woo, then you know which side it is. But honestly, we do that all the time.
Sure.
We take a hammer and hit the back of the blower motor, and sometimes it'll go, sometimes it won't. But if it goes, we know the brushes are bad.
Yeah.
We're still going to replace it. But
yeah.
That's now, what part of town do you live in?
I live on the 39th Avenue in Thunderbird.
Okay. Well, you can go to 27th, I think. Harker's is 38th Avenue in Indian School. But you're
I usually go to 83rd.
Okay. 73rd. All right. And that's something that actually, I don't think the guys at the parts store are going to know the answer to that. But really, there's only two answers. It's the driver's side or the passenger side.
Yep.
Yeah. But
I don't think it's a switch because it doesn't work low, medium, or high.
I think you're exactly right, because high usually is on a relay, and 1, 2, and 3 is on a blower motor resistor.
Now, I got a separate switch for the rear and the front.
I understand. Okay. But normally, yeah, you do, but normally there's a resistor for 1, 2, and 3, and then high is direct. So we're going to run battery power right through the relay and up to the blower motor.
Okay.
So, and really and truly, I'd still hit the back there. Not enough to break the plastic, but just use your fist and beat on that. And if that blower motor comes alive, you've done two things. Now we know which side it's on, and now you know it's got bad brushes.
Sure. Okay.
All righty.
Thank you, Mark.
You betcha. Thank you very much. That was nice.
That
we
was
went
nice.
Right to the point.
Yeah.
And the question was good.
Yeah.
It's don't keep track of those that I can't answer today.
Likewise.
Yeah. All righty, we got another caller. Who would that be, Gil?
That'd be Jeff.
Jeff, good morning to you. How can we help you?
How you doing, Mark?
Good, thank you.
Hey, I have a question for you guys. I've been driving half-ton pickups for about the last 20 years. I'm in the market now. Do either one of you have a favorite three-quarter-ton diesel pickup?
Diesel truck?
Yeah.
Oh. I think we're both going to agree on this.
We could talk all day, but yeah.
And let me ask you, do you drive a diesel?
Yeah.
Okay, what do you drive? A
three-quarter-ton Dodge.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's got the 5.9 or the 6.7 or what?
6.7.
Okay. And what year is it?
17.
Oh, so you have to do the DEF.
Yes.
Okay. I bought a 12.
Yeah, no DEF on that.
So I've got no DEF, and I also have a Dodge truck. So it's pretty simple. Both of us are driving Dodge trucks. That's what we do.
I've been driving, of course, for the half-ton gas engine. I've been driving Silverados, but I know that the diesel is a whole different animal, usually.
It is. It's a new education. It's all new. It's definitely different than driving your gasoline vehicle, for sure. So, Jeff, I would encourage you to maybe make a day of it and go to different dealerships and test drive these vehicles. And for what it's worth, the half-ton market now has diesels available as well. So if you don't tow excess, or if you think you tow too much, well, then you need a three-quarter ton or one-ton truck. But drive all these trucks. Take a test drive. See what you think.
Okay.
And let me cover the question about GM, okay? GM has the best transmission of all of them, the Allison. Number two, that 6.6 Duramax.
6.6 Duramax,
yeah,
Allison.
Well, we had some injector problems early in the 5, 6, and 7s, or at least we did. The fact of the matter is that's still a good truck.
Oh, yeah.
So if you wanted, that would be my second best. Well, that'd be my second choice. In spite of the fact that the shop has a Ford 5 or 6 liter, in spite of the fact we bought it with a blown up motor.
Right.
If you decided to go to the GM side, it's my opinion that Allison's the best, because they put that in giant motorhomes, the Allison 1000, 2000, 3000, and so forth. But I think either one, Nate.
I like my Dodge, but I'm tied between Dodge and Ford, honestly.
Okay.
And then GM has come a long way with their diesel truck and their trucks in general. So,
I saw a real cute bumper sticker the other day. You guys would get a kick out of. It said, "Real trucks don't have spark plugs."
I've seen that one.
Yeah, that's okay.
That's okay. That's a good one.
We'll go with that. So,
okay. All right, thanks, guys.
Okay, got one more thing to say, of course. there's a guy that's got a pickup like mine.
Really?
And it's been dressed a little bit.
Sure.
And there's some uphill battles that you can imagine, going to Roosevelt Lake or, you know, going to any place where the elevation is higher. And you run with the big dogs when there. So
oh, yeah.
If you got a boat or if you got a trailer and stuff like that, it's really a macho thing to be running in front of the pack or passing somebody
else.
And it is clear to him that the Dodge truck is the one that pulls. Now, the three-quarter tons are better than the one-ton because they weigh less.
They weigh less.
But they got
yep.
the same motor.
Yep.
And I know that you rolled your eyes when I said that the Allison was the best transmission, but the new Dodge is not bad at all.
No, they're not.
What's the name of that transmission?
Well, they got two, depending on which one. It's a 68 RFE or the Azen.
Okay, Azen.
Azen.
That's the six-speed, isn't it?
Yes.
With lock and overdrive.
Yes.
I think that's the one my 12 has.
It might.
And
yeah.
I tell you, I...
Same one in mine. They put it through its paces. It's great.
Yeah. So I saw you. It's okay, though. It opened the door for us to talk about it.
Absolutely.
But Dot, I wouldn't go back 5 years with the Dodge transmission.
No, definitely not.
But the newer ones, I agree.
Absolutely.
And Ford would be your second choice?
Yeah.
Did you hit your head on the way into the studio today?
No, I think I tripped, but I didn't hit my head. So.
Which Ford would you get?
6.7
okay.
Ford.
All right. You wouldn't get the 6-liter or the 6.4?
No.
The 6-liter is a big piece of crap, but the 6.4 is better but wasn't perfect. Agree?
Agree.
But 6.7 has hit a home run.
6.7's hit a home run,
yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. All righty. Well, who have you got next, Gil?
We have Dave.
Dave, good morning. What can we do for you?
Hello.
Yes, sir?
Yeah. I've got a 2013 Kia Optima. And beginning of the year, I put some drilled and slotted brake rotors on it, and they were making a little bit of noise when you stop, which I've had it on other vehicles too. But now I'm getting a high speed shimmy between 75 and 80 when I tap on the brakes. Otherwise, I don't feel anything. Is it the rotors? Or I'm thinking it's my rotors are starting to warp a little bit.
Yeah, we're both shaking our head, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Should I replace the rotors and the pads or just the rotors?
Well, do you got drum brakes on the back of that?
No, I got discs.
Disc all the way around?
Yeah.
Why did you put drilled and slotted rotors on it in the first place?
I had them on another vehicle. I had them on an Envoy, and I loved the stopping power I had with them.
Okay.
I mean, the stopping power was unbelievable.
Okay.
And so I figured I'd give them a try on this.
All right. How many miles are on the Kia?
It's got 112 now.
Okay.
I just put them on about maybe 10,000 miles ago.
And last but not least, when you pulled the brake pads off, were they worn evenly?
Yes, they were.
So inner and outer pad. Inner and outer pad
were
the same.
Yeah.
Okay.
They were all good.
Okay.
And these, I'm looking at, the rotors look clean, but I'm thinking I got a little bit of warpage in one
okay.
of them.
All right, you're going to have to stick here because I got to take a break, so just stay right there. 602-508-0960 if you have a car question. 602-508-0960. Mark Salem and Nate Percain. Nate's a diesel guy, and I drive a diesel too, but we predominantly deal in gas vehicles, but diesels as well. We'll be back right after this. Here talking to you, and we're doing our best to answer your questions. You're welcome to join us at 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We left it off with Dave about his 13 Kia with a 80-mile-an-hour shake.
Yep.
Oh, and let me turn on your microphone so that we're both talking at the same time. It's clear his rotors are warped or his wheel bearings are bad.
Could have bad wheel bearing, too, you bet.
And it can be either one. So, are you a fan of on-the-car brake rotor?
Yes.
I am, too.
Yes.
I am, too. So the problem with that is you don't necessarily pick up that bad wheel bearing.
No.
Necessarily. So I probably would drive it to see if the wheel bearings were making any noise on a left turn, right turn, 40 miles an hour or higher. But on the car turning is our favorite. And that way you're actually taken into consideration everything, including the rotor. So, and clearly you have a rotor problem.
Absolutely.
Then you turn. You can't turn a drilled and slotted rotor, can you?
Yes, you can.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You can? Really? I didn't think you could.
Absolutely. Yes.
No, we just take out a belt sander and all the way around it. I'm kidding. And thank you for laughing.
I know.
So, no, you can cut slotted ones. It's no problem. So, when you take the rotor off, before you want, you got to clean the hub and the back of the rotor. Because if there was any grease on the hub where the backside of the rotor sits, then it's going to wobble. And no amount of cutting is going to straighten it up. So just make sure the back side of the rotor, the back of the hub, and the front of of the rotor.
Would you replace the brake pads, too, if you have a cut?
No.
If you just recently did it, no, not necessarily. No.
Yeah.
Dave, I would caution on a couple things, too, as far as wheel lug nut torque. If you over-torque a lug nut, that pulls the hub too tight against the rotor, and that can also contribute to brake rotor wobble, if you will. And then, depending on the pad you bought, if it's too aggressive of a pad, that can also build a lot of heat, which would warp a rotor as well. So,
and that's why I ask if you have rear drum.
They're ceramic pads.
It doesn't make any difference. I can burn your ceramics off your Kia.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It's and also... I think your parking brake may apply or adjust up the rear brakes. Do you ever use your parking brake?
No.
Okay. I think if there's a lever at the back of the rear caliper and it's got a cable to it, that typically means application of the parking brake will take the slack up in the rotors and in the pistons. And if that's the case, get into your car, put it in drive, and just pump that parking brake for 20 or 30 times.
Okay.
And that might bring up your rear brakes, because I was wondering, are we overloading the fronts because the rears aren't working? That's why I asked you if you had drums. But anyway, thank you very much, Dave. Leonard, good morning. How can we help you?
A couple of questions, Mark.
Okay.
I've got an 02 Buick, 62,000 miles on it. And the driver's information center, it shows stuck at 137 oil pressure, 137. That's the first question. I checked overnight, the oil overnight on the oil pan, check out how much oil is in the pan overnight. I had a drain. I brought this because it looks to me about a quart overfill on oil.
Okay.
So that's the second problem.
I don't.
And then also, I also have on my temperature gauge on my driver's list, it shows out and won't go over 190 degrees. Normal.
Well, I think what I'd do first is I'd grab a hold of that temperature switch and ground it and see if the gauge can go up past full, past the red zone. That's what I'd do first. The second thing I'd do is pull the oil pressure switch and put a manual gauge on it and see if, because really and truly, if you have 120 pounds of oil pressure, you're the first one I've ever seen. But the idea is the gauge lying to me? Or do you really have 120 pounds? And if you have 120 pounds...
And the original was replaced about 2 years ago.
The original?
So no oil pressure.
What was replaced?
The oil pressure sender that was replaced two years ago.
Okay.
Because oil pressure was showing no pressure, but on the idiot lights and dash, the red light didn't come on, so I knew it was oil pressure.
Okay.
But anyway, I had the switch replaced, and now it's failed again, choking 137.
Yeah, I can't answer your question. I don't know what kind of part you bought. I don't know if somebody drug the end of the. Wait a minute, if they drug the end of the oil pressure switch across the greasy manifold before they stuck it in, which would have contaminated the switch's ability to measure. And the last but not least, you could have a dash problem.
Yeah.
So you could have a dash problem, but it's I've described how I would do it, Nate. Any difference?
No difference.
Okay. Just ground the temp wire. You got to know which one to ground, and that'll tell you if the gauge is capable. Another thing too is start it up in the morning when it's cold, and look in the radiator and see if the water is flowing. If the water is flowing, it shouldn't be, because the thermostat should be shut. And so if the water's flowing and moving through the radiator, then the thermostat's stuck open and it's never going to warm up. You can also take a temperature gun, a cheap temperature gun, and gun the lower hose and the top hose, and they should be pretty much the same temperature till the thermostat opens up. So if the top hose gets hotter before the bottom hose does, then there's a good chance that you've got a thermostat that's stuck wide open. So those are that's the process that you would pay Nate and I $450 an hour to tell you what's the matter with it. And, of course, I'm teasing you.
Yes, teasing.
All righty. Well, listen, Leonard, thank you very much. Mark, you're up next.
Hi, gentlemen. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 2017 Chrysler Pacifica, 66,000 miles on it. And this doesn't happen a lot of times, but it does happen. It seems like when I just start off from a stop, just regular driving,
2 minutes
before it gets into the other gear, it feels like someone's slamming me from the backside, a big thump, and then the car continues on. It doesn't do it all the time. I've had it to Chrysler. Of course, they drive around the block and say they can't find anything. It doesn't throw a code or anything like that, and I don't know what's going on.
Okay. Well, and what year was that?
17.
Oh, okay. 67,000 miles?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I'm going to put you on hold because I'm about a minute and a half away from a break. But what you're talking about is a harsh 1-2 shift. That's the terminology that you need to use. You need to figure out how to make that happen and when it happens. Where's the temperature gauge? How far have you driven? And so forth. Now, if you figure out that it's within a mile and a half from home when you leave, then I would think that you'd manually shift that dog. And so you pull it down into first and then go up, click second, clip third. The question then becomes, do you still have the harsh shift? Now, if you have to manually shift the car for the whole day and the problem goes away, and the next day you don't manually shift, you put it into drive, and the problem comes back, that's going to help somebody to fix your problem.
Absolutely.
So yeah. You agree with all that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Maybe a simple check being cold if it is the 1-2 shift, check fluid level before you leave the house.
And what's nifty about that is the information is on the dipstick. So it says check hot, check cold, check park, check neutral, check drive. Everything's on the dipstick.
Yep.
So that makes it kind of easy for everybody to know. The old days of being in drive and cold are gone. There's lots of different variations of that. So anyway, I got to go, Mark, but thank you. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. You got a good chance to get in. 602-508-0960. Okay, 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, Mark Salem with Nate Bricaine from Strictly Diesel, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. If you have a diesel question, now's the time to do it. Automotive Dynamics is Sun City's largest and most trusted source for complete automotive services. Chuck opened that place up in 1982, and I've known Chuck since the mid-70s. Chuck now has his son Derek running the Automotive Dynamics, and his staff and technicians are not paid a commission or a percentage of a repair bureau. So therefore, Derek can assure you that they won't sell you unnecessary parts or repair to butter their own bread. So if you're looking for a good shop in the Sun City area, I'd recommend Auto Dynamics. They're north of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue. We're going to go back to Mark. Did we still have Mark on the line?
Oh, no, he's gone.
Okay.
I thought we took care of him. Yeah.
Shane, you're up next. How can we help you?
Hey, I'm calling on behalf of a buddy of mine. He has a 2002 Hyundai Sonata, and his gas tank fills really slow. It keeps shutting off. We've replaced the canister, the carbon canister, blown out hoses in between there, and I'm wondering what else we should step into next.
Nate?
There's something going on with the filler neck and or a vent on the tank.
Yeah. There is a vent on the tank, and the vent usually is attached in some fashion to the filler neck. And so sometimes you have to start with pulling the filler neck out, and when you pull the filler neck through the filler door, you'll bring not only the metal neck, but it plugs into a grommet in the side of the tank, more than likely. You'll bring the vent, and if the vent's plugged, then or kinked, sometimes they get kinked, then that's the issue. I can't think of anything else other than the vent is plugged. If he pulls the nozzle out, does it make any difference? If he pulls the nozzle out to where it's only a quarter of an inch behind the gate, does that make any difference?
I will check with him.
Okay.
I'm not with him right now.
Yeah. Well, obviously, you're filling it so fast with gas that it's burping back at you. And you and I both know that's not the way it's supposed to be. but Nate and I are in agreement that we've got a vent problem. And it's not likely to be the vent on the top of the tank because that's part of the evaporative system. And at that time, we open a valve up front and we suck the fumes off of the top of the tank. But normally, you're not going to have that valve open when you're filling. Otherwise, if you stuff the tank, you'd shove raw fuel forward, and it would contaminate the canister. So we're both voting vent. If you had an emissions diagram of this car, it would tell you about the vent. You could probably find that someplace.
Okay.
Talk to your garage, okay?
Okay, that sounds good.
Thank you, Shane. Thank you. Jason, you're up next.
Wonderful. Hi, gentlemen. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a 2007... Toyota Corolla S, and it has a little over 300,000 miles on it, and I'd like to know if I myself, as opposed to taking it into the dealership, can change the transmission fluid on it.
Yeah, I mean, is it one of those sealed transmissions, so to speak?
That's good question. I don't know that answer.
I don't think. Is it a 2 or a 7?
It's a 2.
Okay. I'm pretty sure you don't. I'm real sure
okay.
You don't. Have you ever changed it?
Yeah. I had it changed at the 175,000 mile mark.
Okay.
And I'm doing more highway travel, and so I wanted to... I saw that it was getting a little dirty, but I didn't know if it was something that I could do or whether it was something I needed to take back into the dealership.
Well, no, both Nate and I could handle that, and so could most of the independent shops we know. So,
okay, all right.
Here's your choice, though. Do you change the pan and the filter, which gets you 3 quarts out of 10, maybe, or is this the time you flush it?
Gotcha.
And they're going to interrupt the two lines up front that go through the cooler, and they're going to hook up to it, and we have a machine, and we push the button and say, go. And the machine shoves in new. We got a clear hose on the backside. As soon as we get the mud out of it, it's a clear hose on that side. Boom, we disconnect. We check the fluid, take some out, add some more, and you're out of there. However, what makes me uncomfortable is nobody else goes 170. What I normally tell people is on the first service, we do pan and filter. Then the next service, we do flush. Then the next service, we do pan and filter. Because when they pull the pan off that, they're going to find mounds of clutch material. They better not find any snap rings that are broken. But you didn't say anything about it running bad or shifting bad. So... And then there's going to be other guys with gray hair that are going to say, Mark is full of manure. They're going to say, new fluid's going to wipe that transmission out. And that's an old wives' tale. Nick and I are shaking our heads right now.
Yeah.
And the fluids are superior, and it's not the case that we're going to go in and wash all the cholesterol off the transmission's veins and cause it to go into a heart attack. That ain't going to happen.
Nope.
So, and as far as the flush is concerned, you got any idea? Throw a number?
Your guess is mine,
to 300, I'm guessing, depending on how many quarts of fluid it is and how long it takes.
Okay. But, now, I live in the Litchfield Park area. Do you have a recommendation of a shop that might be nearby?
Well, Litchfield. Give me Cross Streets.
Cross Streets, Major Cross Streets. I'm at basically Camelback and Litchfield Park, or excuse me, Litchfield Road.
Okay. Well, I've got 67th Avenue in Northern, Mike's Auto Tech. I've got Grand and 91st Avenue. It's a little bit west of you. I got S&S Tire. And then in Sun City, I got Automotive Dynamics. So I've got all those guys that can perform this service for you. And they'll use the appropriate fluid as well. So Mike's Auto Tech, S&S Tire, and Automotive Dynamics. Those are the three places I know are good.
Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you very much. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Real quick, you know what we did last week?
What'd you do?
In spite of the fact that I was a jerk last week because we had some callers that didn't play by the rules. They didn't give me the year, make, and model of the mileage. They started off with... telling me all the stuff they've done.
Right.
And I was a jerk last week.
My wife told me that. A couple other people told me that. But we did 19 callers last week, which was a record.
That's awesome.
We've never done that. Never since 1988 when I first started doing it. Wow. So we're going to be back in a minute. Well, welcome back, everybody. Nate Burkane from Strictly Diesel up at I-17 in Pinnacle Peak. My name's Mark Salem. We're here both to help you out with your car questions, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Thompson's Auto Repair is in Mesa. He's on Main Street just east of Stapley. Brian and Thelma are really good people. I've known both of their families since the 60s and the 70s, so the Vivian and the Thompsons have been around a very long time. Brian and Thelma have ASC certified technicians. They're really good at what they do. It's the diagnosis, it's the estimate, it's the repair, and then the verification that the problem you went in to fix is gone. It's the only place in Mesa that I tell you to go to. You're welcome to go anywhere you want, but they have my stamp of approval. That's Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street, just east of Stapley. Let's go to the phones now. Francis, good morning.
Good morning to you. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a general question about what would be a good substance to use for belt dressing.
Nate, you want to take that hot potato?
That is a hot potato. How about you, Mark? You want to take it?
Neither one of us are in favor, Francis, of putting anything on your belt. Here's what I say. The only thing that's acceptable to put on your belt is water to determine which belt is making the noise. So we take a little spray bottle, and the motor's running, and maybe there's a squeal when the power steering is turned left, and then we spray some water on one of the belts, and then when it quiets down, then we know which belt it is. But if you insisted on putting belt dressing on there, I'd use a bar of soap.
I'll try your water solution and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, tell me what you got that you're trying to fix. You got a belt squeal?
Well, no, it's not squealing. It's on a 15 terrain, and, well, the air conditioner is running most of the time now. But in front of the car, the engine area noise is something else. You think you're running five vacuum cleaners in there, and I'm just thinking the belts are dry, or maybe it's my air conditioner compressor.
Nate? That sounds like your cooling fans are running.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is normal.
Yeah. So. But if that's the case, though, Francis, the fans are supposed to run. So when you're not moving, then you don't have airflow across the radiator, so we put electric fans on them to give you that extra airflow. So I think you get the noise to be made, you open up the hood, and then identify the fan either in front of the radiator and condenser or behind the radiator. And if you can put your hand, without putting your hand in the belts, over the top of the shroud and that fan's blowing, then go turn off the air. Wait about 3 minutes and go back, and if the noise is gone, you're okay. You're okay.
Okay.
All right?
I'll try that.
All right, Francis, thank you very much. What we get is the car overheats when we're slow, and it's fine when we go fast.
Yeah.
And so we know that we've lost the cooling fan on the slow side. And so when we start ramming air through it, you know, my wife does like 100 miles an hour, so she never has that problem with airflow across the radiator. But... it is. We still get cars with belt dressing all over the inside of the engine compartment.
Yeah.
Have you tried to clean that out in a while?
That's nasty.
It is.
Yeah.
We have a car wash next door. It's hard for us to do that.
Exactly.
Oftentimes, engine cleaner soaked and then drive it next door and wash it all off. You're lucky if you get it all off.
Exactly. Yep.
And then the squeal will typically come back for some period of time once you get all the soap off of it and all that other stuff. So I'm not a fan of belt dressing. If there's no other way to identify it, then it's cheaper to replace the belt than it is to use the belt dressing, because you just added $20, $30, $40, $50 to your bill to clean up the belt dressing.
Exactly. Yep.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Gil is our engineer. Gil's really good, you know that?
He is good.
He'll tell me stuff like, there's this fly drive. He'll tell me stuff like, in my ear, he'll say, you're dead meat.
From time to time,
he says.
Yeah.
And I'd made a joke not too long ago, and he goes, oh, you're NFL, not for long.
And so he's
really good at what he does. You'll notice he's talking to us in our headphone, and he'll say 2 minutes, Mark. and then I go like this. That's telling him, I heard you the first time.
Right. Yeah.
So we talk back and forth with our headphones on. Hey, Gil, just fire up your mic.
Go ahead.
All right, you're on the air right now?
Yes.
Try not to use any really bad words to get me into trouble.
I'll try.
Yeah. So compared to all the other hosts, now you have a lot of tape shows, right?
Yes.
Okay. Does everybody else on the live show hit their marks?
I'd say about 80% do.
Okay. I'm not going to ask you who, so you can talk, you know, truthfully to me. And when they don't hit their marks, is it the soft ones or the hard ones?
It's the hard breaks.
Okay. So the hard break, Nate, is I have to hit 30, not 29-41, not 30-50. I got to hit 30.
Yeah.
And then 58-50 is the out time. So the 17 and the 40 are, I went to 18 on the 17.
Oh, okay.
So, and the 40, I messed that one up too. But we're 8 minutes away from the 58-50. And Gil wants me to hit it on the button.
On the button. Okay.
Yeah. And if I don't, Gil, what is it you say?
I can't say.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. He'll call me a name, but he has a smile on his face.
He does.
But I already know that I screwed up.
Yeah.
But what he does really well is he covers for me.
He does.
So he has a couple of buttons there that'll give him 5 or 10 seconds, or he'll know that he's going to take this 30 out and go 25 or something.
Right.
So he'll know to cover up for me. Not too long ago, I said something that I knew I shouldn't have. And he says in my ear, you're dead meat.
Good to know he's got you covered.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I just said to him, don't lie. If they say, did Salem really say this? The answer is you already listened to the tape. There's no reason for anybody to answer you. You know he did.
Yep.
So anyway, Gil's really good. I've been doing this since 1988, and he's actually the least intrusive. He just gave me a 2 minute last break. So he's telling me what I need to do, and I need to look at the clock. Then he also synchronizes our clocks. So at the very beginning, it's 51, 37, 38, 39, 40, and we have to get those aligned.
Yeah.
So he's pretty good at what he does, and if not the best I've ever had, just because he manages the show. The rest of the guys will talk to me about the car and help me with the answer. And, of course, you got headphones on, and they're talking to you. You're trying to hear the customer or the caller, and then your head's working. Now, did you hear that right there?
I did hear that.
We have a caller.
Awesome.
Oh, who might that be, Gil?
That would be Jerry.
Jerry, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark. How are you doing? I'm actually on my way down the hill here from Payson, so if you lose me, you'll know why.
No problem.
Listen, I take my Jeep to your shop all the time, and by the way, you guys are just great.
Thank you.
Have an 86 CJ, 242, 5-speed, 4-wheel drive. I noticed the other day, and I got that safety plate over the transfer case.
Uh-huh.
It looks like there's a clear oil coming out of it under the garage floor.
Okay.
Is that a seal, or do you have any idea what it is?
It's easy, though, for us to do that. We're just going to lift up in the air and use a bunch of brake cleaner and clean all that stuff off, and then we'll put it in 4-wheel drive, and we'll just run it. And wherever it's at, now see, the problem with you is you're going down the road at 50, 60, 70 miles an hour. Sometimes 80, don't deny it. And you're blowing that oil all over the place. Well, we're just going to let it sit there. But to answer your question, it's most likely a seal. You agree?
I would agree.
And it could be a variety of the seals. It could be tail shaft seal. It could be, I don't know, do they pick up the speedometer on the Jeep off of the transfer case, or is that on the tail shaft of the transmission?
It's been a while. It could be off the T-case, but yeah.
Okay, and then another thing is there's a gasket between the transmission and the T-case, almost always. So there's a couple of them there. This isn't a break your wallet kind of thing.
Doesn't sound like it.
Yeah, this is going to be a lot of labor for a $25 gasket.
Okay, I looked up there the other day, and there's a hole in that safety plate, and there's like a spring, some kind of a spring, on the transfer case on the driver's side, and it looked like it was kind of coming from there, although you know. It could be anywhere, I guess, on that plate.
Okay, is the spring about the size of a pencil lead, and it's real fine, and
it might be
round? It's a big spring?
Yes, it's a bigger spring, yeah.
Hold the shifter.
I'm guessing maybe like a half inch wide, maybe inch and a half long type of thing.
Okay. Nate, that sounds like maybe a shifter linkage?
Something related to the linkage, yeah.
Yeah.
To help isolate or hold it still.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a good thing you found that. That's certainly something that you need to hang on to. But the answer to where it belongs is going to be easy to figure that out. It's an external spring. So there's somewhere along the line, there's two holes that are 3 inches apart, and that spring is supposed to go in those two holes.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, the spring is still on there. It didn't come off. I just looked up inside that safety plate or whatever, and the oil seemed like it was just kind of coming from that area, and it looks like a clear type of oil. Is that typical of a transfer case?
Yes.
Okay.
Now, wait a minute, Jerry. Are you married?
Yes, I am.
All right. Have her lay underneath the doggone Jeep, and you move the shifter levers and the four-wheel drive, and just when she says the spring moves, then we're done.
Okay.
You know,
what a great, and you know, you think my wife would do that, Mark?
You know what? If you ask her nicely, and you got to do this. You got to say, honey, I really need to move those levers, and all you have to do is, I'll crawl underneath you with you. There's the spring. Now move your head over a little bit, so if the spring gyrates, dirt won't fall in your face. And honey, we'll do it just before we go to bed, so you're in your pajamas. And crawl underneath there with a flashlight and tell me when that spring moves. So he said it was a 5-speed, I think. So it's going to be a clutch return spring, or it's going to be something in the transfer case.
Yep.
So that's not going to really be a big deal. Now, the oil leak, if it's a clutch fork, it shouldn't be. If the oil leak is up there, then it's in the transmission. It's not in the T-case.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So let us know how that works with your wife, though, okay?
Yes, yeah. Dream on, Mark. I'll give Paul a call on Monday and
all right.
Bring it over.
Thank you. And you
You're
know
welcome.
What? Tell them you want to walk out into the shop, and they'll let you, and say,
okay.
I want to show you where it's at, and I want to watch you guys look at it. That's okay. That's okay.
Thanks. Have a great week.
Okay. Thank you, Jerry. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. You let customers come into the shop?
Absolutely.
They can't come and help.
No.
But we want to show them.
Sure.
Now, we have I think it's an Instagram a thing on the internet. My daughter handles that. And what she does is it's really cool. And you could do this easy.
2 minutes.
It's every technician has the old part and the new part.
Right.
Right? So they have to take this special camera, which is an Apple, and they have to put them side by side with nothing around them, and they have to take a picture. Can you imagine old motor mount that's broken in half and a new one? Right?
Great comparison.
And so you got the cabin filter that looks like that some rabbits lived in there for the last 40 years and a clean one.
Yep.
And the dirty air filter and a clean one. So we do lots of that comparison because we tell people, always get your old parts back. Obviously, you don't want 5 gallons of oil.
No.
Obviously, you don't want something that's really yucky. But if you take your old parts back, say, for instance, I put a mass airflow sensor on your car and the code comes back. You're going to be real glad that you kept that mass airflow sensor because now you can say to me, let's put the old one on and start over again.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
We're not going to give you some, you know, gasket set off a T-case transfer case. We're not going to do that.
No.
But the idea is we're doing that a lot, which makes it really easy for the customer to understand there's a big difference here.
Absolutely.
Plus, he has the two of them before he installs the new one.
Yep.
So, and then we have a men's locker room. As you know, and if they choose not to do that in a specific amount of time after they've had plenty of opportunities to do that on behalf of education, then they when they get off work at about 5, they have to go clean the men's restroom.
Yeah, there you
and
go.
So far, nobody's had to clean the men's restroom because I think the punishment is something they're afraid of.
Yeah.
So nevertheless, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Both of us talk diesels, but Nate's better than I am. Nate's from Strictly Diesel up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. We've known one another for many years, and I tell you that Nate's a big boy. And he has hands like tennis rackets. So you'll know when he meets you at the front counter. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Nate Burkane from Strictly Diesel up at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road he's flying wingman for me today.
That's right.
And Nate and I have been friends for a long time, and Nate owns Strictly Diesel, so that speaks for itself that you do diesel work and domestic light truck diesels as well as imports.
How about Mercedes-Benz? Do you do any of those?
Don't do any of those, no.
You know why? It's the parts. For me, it's the parts.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, a valve body on some cars is $200 or $300, and it may be $2,000 on a Mercedes.
Yeah.
And if you mess that up, you eat that,
exactly.
That valve body, and
yeah.
Then it doesn't taste very good even with steak sauce on it.
No, definitely not.
So, anyway, we've got diesels and gas covered, so if you'd like to join us, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Bev, give me 30 seconds. Blackwell Automotive is at 40th Street and Greenway. Tom and I have been friends for a very long time, and people say that we're two peas of a pod, and that embarrasses me and makes me mad. Nevertheless, they seem to think we're somewhat related, but Tom's a really good technician. He knows right from wrong. He's kind of like a dictator of his shop. There's a couple other guys I know that are like that. Everybody understands that Tom's not going to mess around. Everybody understands that you go through the process, and if you get diagnosed as this, it better be this. And if it's not that, then we're going to have to decide who's going to pay the labor that you just wasted, and the answer is the technician. And who's going to pay for the parts we just installed? So there is a pressure to diagnose it right. And then verify at the end of the day that it's done right. So if you're anywhere near 40th and Greenway, 40th Street and Greenway, Blackwell Automotive kind of covers that northeast Scottsdale area. I don't have anybody up there with respect to gasoline kind of stuff, so he's up in that area. Bev, good morning to you. How can we help you?
Good morning. Well, I have an old 1984 Fleetwood Brougham.
Okay.
And it needs some parts, and I'd also like to know if you have any ideas of where to get parts, because Cadillac stopped making cars and parts and in most cases, and also who might be good to select to look at an old car or work on an old car.
Okay. You need a gray-haired guy, okay, because there's a lot of kids that weren't even born back in 84. And let me ask you, where do you live? As, you know, cross streets.
Near Tatum and Shea.
Okay. Well, Blackwell's around the corner from you at 40th Street and Greenway. So I think Blackwell would do it. Let me answer the question for you. They're not hard to find.
Uh-huh.
Here's how we find them. My guys found my mother-in-law, Nate, bought a 41 fire truck,
wow.
A 41 Chevrolet fire truck. We needed a Stromberg carburetor kit and a float. We needed brake springs that you and I have never seen the likes of before. This
wow.
is a spring within a spring.
Wow.
We needed all kinds of parts. The parts department is real good at finding an OEM part number, and then they can change over that part number. They found everything we needed, the kit, the float, the springs. Now, there's a lot of guys out there, but Blackwell's that guy. We all know the parts that 84 Cadillac has. We also know that those parts are still available. I would bet that 99% of the parts on your car I could find, and so could Blackwell and a lot of other guys.
Wow.
So I don't want you to fret about that, because I would if you called me up and you said, what's the availability of parts for my 84 Cadillac, the Brome? And I would say, about everything. About everything, because if the window motor is bad, then we look at the window motor and we go, oh, well, that's an 88 through 92 window motor. So we can do that. So there's lots of – the old gray guys can take a part number and cross it over. Plus, we have access to the manufacturer. So you call a window motor manufacturer and say, hey, I got an 84 Brougham here. And he goes, oh, well, you use 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay, thank you. So we deal with that all the time. And if you go in with Blackwell, you say that I didn't stop by Mark Salem's before I came here, but he has a $50 off coupon for me. And I'll get it before I pick up my car. And then you just keep a straight face, okay?
Oh.
Now, I'm kidding you about that.
right?
Yeah, but it breaks the ice. And they know I referred you to them, and so that puts them on a little bit of a different.
Okay.
So I don't make any money on your car, Beth, I promise you. So I'm not saying mention my name because Tom's going to rebate 10% of the ticket. That's not the case. I don't get nothing.
Right.
So, but
right.
He can take care of you.
Let him know where I got the referral.
Okay, that's it, ma'am.
Okay, and 40th Street and Greenway, what is the address? Do you have it?
No, ma'am, I don't. Let me look here and let me
see
if that's...
The street or...
Hold on just a second. Blackwell, 40th... Oh,
40th and Greenway, northwest corner is a Circle K, and just north of that, close to Bell, you know, on the Bell side, is Blackwell Automotive. 40th and Bell, or 40th and Greenway, northwest corner, and it's just north of the, on your left-hand side as you go north, it's right on your left-hand side past the Circle K.
Left side north of the Circle K.
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, okay, ma'am. Well, I appreciate that very much because I was, you know, trying to find a place to go that I could trust and that knows what they're doing.
Okay, well, he can have you got your pencil handy?
Oh, I've got this all written down.
Okay, let me give you a phone number.
Okay.
602-692-5478.
5478.
Yeah. And you'll probably talk to Christy. Christy's, as all of us, we usually have a lady or a woman that has to keep track of us, and Christy's that person for Tom.
Okay, Mark. Thank you so very much.
Okay.
God bless your day.
Thank you to you, ma'am. Thank you very much for that. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Automatic transmission exchange. You talk about gray hair. You're talking about Phil. Phil was around when Fred Flintstone got his car with the stone wheels.
Nice.
So he knows those kinds of things. He knows what's going on with the transmission. If you've ever gone up and down 40 or Washington Street, on the north side of the road at 40th Street in Washington, is Phil. He's been there a long time. He's been there since 1968. How old were you in 1968?
Nate? I wasn't.
14, huh? I was 14.
Yeah.
So 54, 68, that's pretty close, 14. So the idea is he's been around a long time. He really does a good job in diagnosis. He says, I want you to eliminate this idea that every transmission that has a problem is needs an overhaul. He says, because we overhaul very few, unless they come in on a tow truck and the guts are hanging on the ground. So the idea is not everybody needs it. But if you're really needing the transmission, he's the only one in Phoenix I recommend, 40th Street in Washington, automatic transmission exchange. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. How long have you been in business?
2005.
Okay, all right.
Yeah.
That was a tough time of the year because we were still transitioning into fuel injection. We were still transitioning to coilover ignition. There was a lot of that late 90s and early 2000s when we really started having all that new technology. Do you remember being, I'll admit that I was, do you remember being scared about the distributless ignition?
Oh, yeah.
And all that kind of stuff? It was just a huge change. The one year, the years I was especially scared to death was the middle 70s. Because we went to electronic ignition on the Ford, Chrysler, and GM, and we didn't have a chance on that. No points. We had a coil inside the distributor cap on the GMs. Ford had those stupid modules with all the different colors of grommets. So you had to, if it was a blue grommet, you had to replace it with a blue grommet, which was kind of cool.
Right.
But if you looked at it and it was a yellow grommet and you put a yellow in there and it should have been in blue, then you're going to chase your tail for a while.
Exactly, yeah.
So those were the years. GM, I think, went to electronic ignition, 74, 75. Ford and Dodge were pretty close together. There was these little K cars in the Chryslers, and they had a pickup assembly, and then they had an ignition module on the firewall. Oh, those used to drive us crazy. But, admittedly, we didn't understand how everything really worked.
Right.
So you'd take the module off, put a new module on, and hope it worked. But if not, then you'd take the distributor part and put a new pickup assembly in it, and it would probably work. But
yeah.
Now you got a module that you've put in somebody else's car. So there are times, though, that I do guess. I'll admit it. If it's a part that I can easily put back in inventory, then I'm going to put a module on it and you drive it. How long will it take you to know if we hit the home run on this? Oh, it'll take me 3 or 4 days. Okay, 7 days, you got it. I'm going to put this part in, you try it.
Yep.
And see what happens.
Yep.
It's an intermittent problem. I can't get it to happen. This is what I want to try. And I'm going to charge you no labor and no part if the problem's still there. So, I'm not going to do that on a dashboard or anything like
that
costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
All right, we got a caller. Who's that, Gil?
That would be Bobby.
Bobby, good morning.
Good morning. I got a 2014 Chevy pickup truck, and it has a V6 engine in it. But I'm having some issues with the transmission. It just seems like when I start to accelerate, it's making some, like, whistling types of noises. It's shifting gears. Have you heard something like that going wrong on a, on the transmission?
No. No, that's a very unusual tie to the transmission. The whistling noise, is it's not there when you stop, but when the light turns green and you accelerate, does it, is it go 10, 20, 30, 40? Does it go up to 50, 60, 70 miles an hour?
Every time it shifts a gear, it does like a little pitching, whistling noise every time it shifts gears.
Gosh, yeah. I don't know.
Check engine light.
Yeah. You, oh, that's right. Do you have a check engine light?
No.
Okay. You know, I don't know. Sounds are kind of tough, but I can tell you that I'll go first. Half the time, the sound isn't what everybody thinks it is. Half the time,
absolutely,
somebody can listen to it and have it up in the air or whatever and go, oh, it's right here. Half the time.
Yeah.
It, if you're seasoned and you've heard lots of noise underneath and inside cars, you can hear it right off the bat. I can't think of anything that would create a whooshing or a sucking noise on a 2014 Chevrolet.
It's just like a high pitch type of every time it shifts gears, a little high pitch like whistling noise.
Okay.
I'm going to try your transmission shop you just talked about.
Okay.
Stop by there.
Yeah, yeah. What other part of town do you live in?
I live in Ahwatukee.
Okay. Yeah, is ATE at 40th Street in Washington out of your way, or do you work up in that area?
No, it's close. I work close to there, so that's perfect.
Oh, well, that's perfect, too.
There you go.
I hit the nail on the head. So, yeah, and just don't go in on Monday or Friday nights, Monday morning or Friday nights, for obvious reasons. But I think you learn how to make sure it's going to happen. Maybe even manually shift the thing, pull it down in low, shove it up one gear, and then figure out how to make sure you can make it happen at the worst, and then you call them and say, I'd like to drop by at, 2 o'clock, and if I can, I'd like to take your technician because I have a noise and I can make it happen. I can make it happen. You know, if you come into my shop like that, we're going to hug you. Because if you can make a problem happen, then we are. All right, let me ask you this, Nate. How much money does he save in diagnostic time if he can make it happen?
Oh, quite a bit.
$50
easy.
Easy $50.
Easy.
So
yeah.
If you can make it happen, that just greases the skids, so to speak. Okay?
All right. Will do.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your information.
All right.
Appreciate it.
You bet. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Nate, it's 50-51. I got a break at 18. Watch this. Mark Salem and Nate Perkain. Nate's from I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 602-315. No, that's my cell phone number. Never mind. 602-508-0960. That's kind of embarrassing.
That is a little embarrassing.
602-508-0960. Gil, what did you want to say?
I just wanted to say that you, sir, hit your mark.
That's a celebration as far as he's concerned.
Yeah, that's a good
because the 18's kind of flexible, but I hit it right on the button.
Yeah.
Okay, we're going to talk real quick about Action Auto Repair. He's up by you, I-17 in Deer Valley. Tom's a good guy, full-service, family-owned operation. I've known him since 1983 when he sold, remember the old engine analyzers, the Allen and
Ooh,
the Bear?
Yeah.
He was the Allen rep.
Nice.
I mean, he could make that machine dance. He's a good guy, quality workmanship, excellent customer service, turnaround time, really good, ASE Master Certified Technician. So Action Auto Repair, I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. If you live in that area and you've got a car and you don't have a good shop, or if you have a shop and you want to compare it, then just have an oil change done at Action Auto Repair. And that way you can compare. Mike, good morning to you. How can we help you?
I need you to solve an argument about a diesel manufacturer.
Okay.
I was driving a little box truck, an Isuzu, for a guy, and I was in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and the motor just died. I couldn't get it over 35. Luckily, the ramp was right there, and there was an Isuzu truck dealer right there, and I pulled in. The guy says, if you ever had this truck trouble before, just go to any GM dealer. I says, what? And he says, all GM diesels, the Duramaxes, are made by Isuzu. I says, you're kidding. I didn't know that. And it turned out just to be a fuel filter problem, which I didn't know because I was clueless about diesel.
Sure. Sure.
Does
it's is, that way. There's. Is, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. I just wondered if that's the truth. Does Isuzu make all the diesels for GM?
Yeah, they have a whole lot of them. I don't think they make the Duramax.
Duramax is made in America now, but I think they come from Isuzu for sure.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of the crossover. So I'll give you an example that I know for a fact. The new Ford trucks, they come with Continental brand belts. They come with Bendix brakes. They have Denso rotating electrical, which is alternators and starters. And then they have Hitachi computer components. So there's no such place in the United States that makes a single part for Ford. Ford is like all the rest of them. They hire somebody in Indonesia to make their motor mounts. So in your Isuzu, there's lots of aftermarket parts that are easily available. That wasn't a bad motor.
No, not at all.
I think the thing we saw was overheating, but in reality it wasn't really overheating. People just weren't used to the needle running past half.
Yeah.
And so that was a kind of an education thing.
Sure, sure.
But you're right that Isuzu could be repaired, especially those box van and those commercial box van,
yep.
Could be done at either an independent shop or a Chevrolet dealer.
Right.
That take care of it?
All right.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you for bringing that up. Nick, you're up next. How are you?
Gentlemen, how are you today?
Oh, good. We're both north of the dirt, and our wives aren't divorcing us, so that's pretty good.
Awesome. Quick question. So I have a 2007 Dodge Durango, and Mark, I think I talked to you a little bit about this last year. I had an air conditioning problem where if it's really, really, really hot outside, my air conditioner is working, but after about 2 hours, it keeps blowing, but it turns into hot air. What sucks is I can't just take it to a place to fix it because unless I drive it for a few hours, it's not going to happen. It's just the weirdest thing, and I don't know what I can do about it.
Well, that's not
replace
hard.
Replace the whole thing?
No. First of all, you have to find the air conditioning compressor, and when it blows hot, you pull off to the side of the road, and you open up the hood real quick, and is the nose of the compressor spinning? So we have to determine why it's blowing hot, and I'll bet you $9 that the front of the compressor is not spinning. So now the question is there's a low pressure switch and a high pressure switch? Which one of them is shutting off the air compressor, the air conditioning compressor? So in your particular case, the high pressure switch is probably at or near the compressor, so it's not going to be really easy to get. So if it was me, I would say, I'm going to use a cotter pin, and I'm going to pull the plug on that high pressure switch, and I'm going to jump it. And then I want you to drive it for a day. And the question is how long will it take you to figure out that the air's blowing all the time? And you'll say, a day. And I'll say, fine. Now, there's a lot of shops that are going to do that. The second thing is if the high-pressure switch is kicking it out, there's a good chance that the airflow across the radiator and condenser is defective. So if you live out in the country, you might have the condenser and the radiator filled with brush and filled with dirt and dust and all that kind of stuff. So there's usually a reason. Now, if the low-pressure switch is kicking it out, that's a little easier to access. It's probably low on Freon. And so that would be something that you'd want to probably have. But you know what? Do you have a garage that you do business with?
No, I do live out in the country in Buckeye. So
okay,
but that's where I'm at.
Yeah, I mean, if you pulled into most shops and were real nice about it, and you weren't there on Monday mornings or Friday nights, and just say, "Can you point to the high pressure or the low pressure switch?" Most of us would. Most of us would. We'd just walk out with you and say, "Here and here." And then you say to them, you know, can I count on you to help me diagnose this? And would you give me a cotter pin or a little jumper wire, an insulated jumper wire or something like that? I think most of us would help you out on that. So that's how I'd do it. And here's the good news. The good news is it blows cold in the mornings. And it can blow cold, but it also blows hot. Well, the fact that it can blow cold, that's a good deal.
Yeah, and it's weird because it's only when it's, like I said, when it's really hot and after it's been running for about, you know, maybe 2 hours.
Okay.
So,
well, let me ask you this.
I had taken it to... go ahead.
Let me ask you this. If you were on the highway for 2 hours, would it still be there or would it not?
It would, and then it never comes back to cold.
Okay, so
it just blows hot.
Okay, so it doesn't make any difference if you're on the highway driving or you're in the city. You can pretty much count that it's going to blow on hot. It's going to go hot.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I was looking for airflow. If you have airflow on the highway and you say, "Oh no, it doesn't do it on the highway. It only does it around town," then you had a fan clutch problem or an electric fan problem. That's what I was fishing for. So I can't tell you what it is.
Yeah, because I had taken it to one of the places, Sun Devil or something like that. They had changed the insulators.
1 minute.
Or something like that. And they thought that was going to be the problem, or fix the problem, but it did not.
Yeah.
So,
how much did that guess cost you?
Oh, I think it ended up costing me, $200.
Okay. All right, as long as you knew it was a guest, then there's no problem. But I don't think I would have done that. I would have probably hooked up a cheesy light on the low-pressure switch and run it through the door and put it on your dash, and that would have cost you $30, $40, $50. And I'm going to say, does that light go out when it gets hot? And, you know, then you would become part of the diagnostic process. But I'm still going to charge you for helping you diagnose it. But there's a lot of shops out there that can do that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Michael, you stay right there because you're next. 602-508-0960. We have four lines open. It's after the hour of 11 o'clock. Nate and Brecken. I've been saying Brecken. And I'm sorry about that.
That's
Nate
right.
Brecken, B-R-E-K-K-E-N. I have that in my capital letters on my piece of paper now. Nevertheless, Strictly Diesel, south of I-17. It's not south of I-17.
No. Pinnacle Peak, basically, and I-17.
And on the east side or the west side?
East side.
East side, okay.
Yep.
All right. And Nate came from North Scottsdale a long time ago and had quite a business in North Scottsdale. Have you been able to transfer a lot of that business?
Oh, yeah.
But that's perfect.
Yeah.
That's perfect. But that means people really like you and will make the drive just to patronize you. Okay, let's go to the phones. Michael, you're up first. How can we help you?
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Good.
I might lose you. I'm driving up I-17 right now. But you were talking about diesels before, and now, nobody wants to touch the old 300Ds. Is that true?
You're talking about the Benz?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got a guy.
I got a guy, too, and I was just going to turn you on.
Wait a minute. Does his first name start with a G?
No, his first name starts with an M.
Okay, hold on. We're gonna do this, all right. Okay? I got a gray-haired guy in Scottsdale that knows more about Mercedes-Benz than I know about anything. Anything. I can call him on the phone and he can diagnose it. I mean to tell you, and all he works on is Mercedes. Do you know who I'm talking about?
I don't.
No, I don't. But I live in Cottonwood and I've got a guy in Cottonwood that knows him.
Oh, that's good.
But there's a guy in Central Phoenix. He's off of 7th Avenue on right behind Char's bar. He's on Coolidge.
Yeah.
He's on Coolidge. Schulte Automotive.
Okay.
This guy, as a kid, he used to boil out the old diesels and put them back together and stuff. I drive down there to see him.
Okay.
I've got two 300Ds, and I love them, and he takes good care of me. So, I know they're hard to work on. People don't like working on them because they're little grease pockets.
I don't know that I agree with that, but there's a lot of Mercedes-Benz that have very proprietary hardware. So you can go in there and diagnose it, but you haven't got a tool to go in and get where you need.
Exactly right.
Yeah, you have to have all the different scanners, because unlike the GM, Ford, and Chrysler, where we can update our scanners, Mercedes-Benz has one for 3 months of this year and one for 6 months of this year.
Exactly right.
So,
well, that's the but I'm talking about the 84 and 84s and before all the computers and all that stuff.
Yeah. Well, all right.
And there's still a few of them driving around, and they're great cars, but I just heard you talking about how difficult they are to work on. And,
okay.
But you're our guys.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. It's always nice to know somebody who you can send somebody to. Joe, you're up next, Joe.
Hey, you guys. So I'm working on an 01 Mercedes D320.
Okay.
And it's my sister's car. So this is the third time, Mark, that I've changed the transmission adapter plug on it. And just wondering, is it normal for this thing to go out, like, every couple of years, start leaking fluid again? Because, it's such a hassle to get to and do. So I'm just wondering if I'm doing something wrong or if it's just inherited. I've read a lot of it.
Okay, no. We don't talk about reading about stuff. Because, like I tell people, if that guy was so good on the Internet, he'd be working for me for $50,000 to $100,000 a year. So I'm not going to say, first of all, nobody would go in there and the guy says, I'm a heart doctor and I want you to pound a nail right below your nipple. Nobody's going to do that. And the people on the Internet, now you've wound me up. Now my underwear's pulled over my head.
It's okay, Mark. It's
and
okay.
Calm down.
Yeah.
But let me explain. I have an answer for you. I want you to call Goody at Goody's Automotive in North Scottsdale.
All right.
Goody. He's a gray-haired guy. He knows Mercedes better than anybody I've ever met. If I have a Mercedes problem, I'll call him, and 9 out of 10 times, he'll put me on the right direction. But I have what other people don't, is I have good intake or input. I mean, I don't – if he says, does it do this, I know that there's three answers, yes, no, or I don't know, and I'm not afraid to say I don't know. But I can guarantee you that he can get close. I sent a guy from Fallon Hills the other day. The guy took it to his Benz for – something, and they ended up taking the engine apart, and it ended up to be really bad.
Ooh.
And the camshafts weren't lined up and all that kind of stuff. So he calls me, and I said, you can take it to Goody, but I don't think he's going to take this, because nobody wants a basket case from some other shop. He fixed it, and he fixed it right, and the guy from Fountain Hills thought he walked on water, and he fixed it for about one-third of what he bid it for, thinking that he was going to have to go back in there and do the whole thing.
Wow.
So he's really, really good. He's worth the drive. When you meet him and see him, and when you see his shop, all he works on is BMWs. He's got a couple of screws loose because he's got a bunch of old motorcycles. And they run, but I'm not quite sure I'd go around the block in a couple of them, but they're like old Triumphs and old, different two-wheel bikes. He's just a really good guy. I can't tell you how 100% sure I am that he can answer your question. I promise you.
All right.
Okay?
All right. I'll give him a holler.
All right. Thank you very much. Joe, thank you. 602-508-0960. We have open lines. There's five. I'm sure you can get one, 602-508-0960. Welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Let me tell you about another good repair shop, a really, really good repair shop. It's Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue in Indian School. He's been around for a very long time. They opened in 1967. Bob and Ellen operate Larry Harker's Auto. They're good people. But what they're really good is that Bob is a diagnostician extraordinaire. But you just can't go in there and tell him the horn honks at 3 o'clock at night. He'll ask you more questions. But if you have that interchange, Nate, it's important, right?
Absolutely.
Ask a question, get a straight answer.
Absolutely.
And there's three answers. Yes, no, and I don't know. But they're really good at that. So if you've got a car that nobody else can fix, you got a gasoline car that nobody else can fix, Larry Harker's Auto, 38th Avenue and Indian School. But they also do oil changes. They work on foreign and domestic cars. And one of the technicians there is a master. He's passed every single ASE certification you can take.
That's
There's
awesome.
12 sections. He has L1 and L2. He has the big truck. He has everything.
Wow.
He's a young man that sat in that chair not too long ago. Very impressive.
Nice.
Very. I think his name's Jeremy. So it's. Oh, and he just was awarded a special medal for ASE, which is our certification place. And they had a big deal in Scottsdale, and he was honored that way. Wouldn't you like to have a dog like that?
That would be nice.
Yeah. So Larry Harker's Auto, you'll find Jeremy there. Let's go to the phones. Dennis, you're up next. How can we help you?
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I have a 99 Ford F-350 with a 7.3 liter diesel.
You want to sell it?
No, actually, I just bought it.
Oh, okay. All right.
My question is, it seems to struggle pulling a 7,500-pound trailer up the Beeline Highway to Roosevelt. And I'm wondering, is that normal? I've never had a diesel before.
Okay.
Nate, and is there anything I can do to boost my horsepower?
Nate's shaking his head, and of course he owns Strictly Diesel. Here's the...
Yes.
I'm interrupting you, Nate. Just a minute.
Yeah.
You promised the next time the plate passes you, you'll make an extra donation, right? Dennis?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Nate, tell him what's wrong with it.
You said it was a 99, right?
Yes.
Okay. There were two different builds of that year, whether it was an early or a late, but typically lack of power concerns revolve around up pipes on those motors. There could be transmission concerns. There could be a couple other things going on, but anything to do with exhaust leaking out of those up pipes will cause you to have a lack of power and a struggle climbing the hill.
And that's the input side of the turbo
input
you're charging
side.
About. Okay,
yes.
So
yes.
We're fresh air in and then boost out.
Yes.
And if you've got exhaust leak, tick, 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 and those
yep.
kinds of things, then you lose boost.
Now, Dennis, do you allow it to downshift?
Yes, and sometimes I will manually downshift it to keep it from going above 2,500 RPM.
Okay. Well, let me just say this. The modern diesel is a little bit different than the older ones. Don't be afraid to let it work. The RPM bin that you have there should be read around 3,000, if I'm thinking correctly.
Yes, 3,000.
Don't be scared to let it go up there. You have an overdrive button that you can click off, turn off overdrive. Turn that overdrive button off, leave it in third, and let it pull.
And you know, I use this analogy. If you have a horse and you only run him at 5 miles an hour while you're working cows, he's only going to be able to run at 5 miles an hour. Yeah, I agree with you 100%. From a mechanical point of view, run that dog up near the red line every once in a while, and it'll love you more than if you drive around with a hot cup of coffee on your dash and you never spill a drop.
Okay, I did that once, and my temperature gauge went up pretty fast. Is that normal?
Could be, yes. Did you ever hear the fan clutch turn on?
I could not tell you, no.
I want to know where it started on the gauge and where it ended on the gauge. Was it before half and it went just slightly over half?
No, it started at half and went almost to the red mark.
Uh-huh.
But as soon as I dropped my RPM back to 2,500, that needle came back down right away.
I think he's got a plugged-up radiator for that kind of heat.
Could definitely have radiator cooling system issue. Catalytic converter, depending on the build again, could be plugged. There's a couple of things. So.
And in the catalytic converter, I don't know about you, but in the gas motors, we drill a hole in front of them, behind it, put a couple of air gauges on there, and just drive it on the hoist. And pretty soon you got 13, 14 pounds on the front side, and you got 8 or 10 on the front side, and you got nothing on the back side.
Right.
So it's easy to tell if they're plugged up. That 7.3 we discussed earlier in the show, that's the best motor the Ford ever made. You agree?
Oh, yeah.
And I want to know how much you paid for that.
I paid $11,000 for it about 8 months ago.
Okay.
It's a full-sized 8-foot bed with a winch on the front.
Okay. Nate's shaking her head. What are you shaking at? That's a steal, I think.
Yeah, for sure. That's a great truck.
I think you stole it. We were talking about earlier in the show off the air that some of the guys with 7.3s are getting what they paid for them. And
it only hit 180,000 miles on it.
Oh, that's nothing.
Good. That's nothing.
But if you're climbing up high on the RPMs and you're running close to the red, the first thing I would do is check the radiator to see if it's plugged up. And that's not something you can do, but that's something the shop can do.
And you can also go buy a temperature gun at Harbor Freight, and when it gets real hot, get out of your truck and gun the lower hose and the upper hose and try to keep the gun 8 inches, 10 inches, whatever you got on one hose, keep it that distance on the other hose. And take a temperature of the coolant going into the radiator, which is the top hose, and going out of the radiator, which is the bottom. For instance, if you got 230 going in and you got 230 coming out, then you got a problem, because we should have 230 going in and we should have 210 or 190 coming out. So as the coolant goes through the radiator, now with that same temperature gun, you can find hot spots and cold spots throughout the face of that radiator. But chances are the condenser's in front of it, which is your part of your air conditioning system, so therefore you're not going to be able to get to the radiator. So somebody can work with you and help you do that. What part of town do you live in?
I live at 152nd Street and Rio Verde Drive.
Okay. Well, Nate's not far from you, so he'd be willing to help you. He's not going to raise his hand and say something, but I am. I'm going to raise his hand for him. But that doesn't seem like... On a 1 to 10, Nate, on a 1 to 10 on the power and a 1 to 10 on the overheat, what are we talking? I mean, with 1 being, come on, and 10 being, holy moly.
3 or 4.
I would have said the same thing. It doesn't take no genius to fix that. It just takes somebody with gray hair and a little gray nose hair.
I got a little bit of that, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
All righty. Nate's the guy that stands. How tall are you?
6'7".
He's 6'7", and his hands are the size of tennis rackets. So
wow.
You don't want to walk in and slap him on the side of the head like we used to, our dads used to do to us, because, I mean, he'll knock your head into the next zip code, but he's a very kind giant. Okay. All righty. Well, that's Strictly Diesel, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak, just east.
Great phone call. Thank you.
All righty. Let's go to Steve. Steve, good morning. How can I help you?
Hi. This isn't a diesel question. I hope it's okay, but I just bought an old police car. A 07 Crown Vic with 16,000 miles on it, and I was worried it has a problem. It's a Ford, and I was worried about the spark plugs. And can you tell me, should I worry a lot about the spark plugs ejecting? And what can I do to make sure my spark plugs don't give me trouble?
Wait a minute. 16,000 miles?
Yeah.
Wow. Great car.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, but does that got the variable Venturi?
07?
Yeah. I don't know the answer. I'm asking. We're talking about the variable Venturi. So the top of the carburetor has these two black float-looking things.
No, it's Crown Vic.
Crown Vic. It has fuel injection.
Okay. I'm wrong. I'm wrong.
07.
Let me say that again. I'm wrong. Okay.
Typically on the 4.6 Crown Vic, those did not eject spark plugs. Usually that was a truck problem.
Yeah.
Okay.
Best thing I can tell you is when the tune-up's done, make sure they're torqued down properly. I don't even remember pulling out threads on a 4.6 Crown Vic ever.
Because
I worked on a few of those.
What is the Ford that's popping spark plugs? There's a Triton? Triton Motors.
Yeah.
Oh, they blow spark plugs out on a regular basis. Your Crown Vic is not part of that.
I don't believe it to be, no. No.
So,
that's great. Thanks.
Alrighty, and we're putting in new threads and we're putting new heads on and we're doing all kinds of fancy stuff, but at 16,000 miles, I'd just pull one and look at it. I'll bet you the electrode, the top and the bottom look perfect. I'll bet you that bottom one's just got a square top on it like a small dance floor. And if they're Motorcraft or something like that, that's good. I mean, I don't necessarily, but you're not going to benefit by putting platinums in that 07.
No.
So, really and truly, if it idles good and runs good and your fuel economy is somewhere between 10 and 15, you're home free.
Okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Good luck, Steve. Yeah. All righty. You know, do you like to work on the old cars? Old cars and old trucks? So do I. Because you can really shine on those things.
They call me nuts for wanting to do that. But, yeah, I enjoy the older stuff. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you real quick. We had an old Packer that came in, and the guy says, you know, nobody's been able to find this overheat. And we said, well, let us try. So we could verify it. It overheated. So Eddie guns the side of the motor, and the two cylinders on the left are cooler, and two cylinders on the right are cooler, but the ones in the middle are just hotter than heck.
Huh.
So we're thinking head gasket, coolant flow, all this kind of stuff. We couldn't figure it out. So Eddie, 30-year veteran, he pops one of the freeze plugs out, and I don't know if you remember, but in the old days we used to put this Bakelite or whatever it is in the walls for insulation. Okay. It's kind of a gravelly, a gold gravelly stuff. This thing was full of that. So we popped 3, 4, 5 freeze plugs out of it, blew compressed air through it, put vacuums on all of it. We filled it with water and let it come out. It was the most, I bet we got 2 coffee cans full of this gravel.
Wow.
Somebody put it in there because it's a great idea,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
So some three-whiskered kid at the auto parts said, oh, put this in there. But we got it out. Everything was fine.
Nice.
Everything was fine. So, yeah, I love the old cars. Absolutely. I love the old car. Who we got next?
We have Connie.
Connie, good morning to you.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I'm sitting here in the parking lot at Safeway, and I was listening to you guys, and you sound awesome. And my husband was a transmission mechanic. He passed away. And he had a 2005 Dodge Ram, and I'm losing power come up 74, and it's spitting all kinds of blackout. And I've been taking it to the Ford place, and I call my cousin who's got nothing but Dodge diesels, and Cummins, and he actually wants to buy this from him, sure. And he says, well, have you changed the fuel filter? And I looked on all my things, and the fuel filter hasn't been changed forever. So I walked into Ford and said, change the fuel filter, just like I was a guy, and they did. Seems to be better, although I've been kind of scared to drive it. But I needed to go to somebody who can look at it and tell me if all this money I'm going to be spending on it is worth it. It's a 2005 2500 diesel.
Okay.
Nate, Cummins diesel.
Nate's shaking his head. He knows the answer. Nate, take her. I mean, no, take it. Go ahead and take the question.
Yeah, take me, Nate.
Whoa.
With Doc's big hand, 7 foot,
hey, I'll pay $50 of her bill. The first $50, I like somebody with a sense of humor. If she brings it to you, I'll pay the first $50.
Yes, we'll see you on Monday. Anyway.
And he's got a great voice. Both of you guys do.
Thank you.
I love it listening to it because, you know, my husband was nuts bolts guy, and he thought I drove like an old grandma. So when you said something about boost and I got a problem with the turbo, I think, and I thought, he says, you drive it like an old lady, Connie, and you got to hit it, you know, and he told me that. And when you said that, I just fell in love with
you. All right, we got 2 minutes, Nate. Go.
Yeah, you do have to drive the truck. Don't be afraid to be hard on it. You'll find that the smoke actually dissipates if you're harder on it for a certain length of time. So the smoke should clear up.
Okay.
I don't know what's exactly wrong with it other than the fuel filter. Definitely do that every 15,000 miles. Bring it to me. Bring it to a diesel shop in your area, wherever you take it. But
I'm in Morristown, so I'm way far away. But I don't care because this car saved his life. We had we bought 2 of them. Because he broke his neck anyway, we went out in a hangar and bought this one, Hangar Halo. So this car actually saved his life.
1 minute.
Sure.
Okay, we got a minute. Go.
Typically a 3/4-ton truck, as long as there's nothing majorly wrong with it, is worth every penny. So
that's a good truck, and a senior guy can drive it and tell you if there's any place that you need to spend money. But I agree with you. If you drive it kind of like an old lady, then you're going to have some black smoke. But yeah. I can guarantee you, Nate and I, we could drive it, and there wouldn't be no black smoke coming out of that thing.
Correct.
So just it's okay
to
be hard
on
it.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Connie, got to
go.
Thank you. All right, Nate, strictly diesel, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak just east. Domestic, foreign, light-duty diesels. Nobody's going to bring a 10-wheeler to you.
No 10-wheeler.
Okay, and you're just starting in gas because the transmission is the same. So thank you for spending your Saturday with me. Mark at MarkSalem.com. If you want to complain about the radio show, that's it. Mark at MarkSalem.com, and nobody will answer you anyway. I'll see you next Saturday right here at 10 o'clock.